is there a message you want to get across? Kind of think of your central theme, central purpose, I think, for writing a book.
Welcome to Literary Gumbo 2.0. Each episode explores the world of writing, publishing, and book marketing. I'm your host, Lisa Engel, the right angle to help you write and sell your story. Sit back and enjoy.
I'm here today with author and speaker and memoirist, Bea Blozer. Welcome, Bea.
Thanks, Lisa. It's great to be on your show.
Well, Bea and I first met when we both released books in the spring of 2021. Mine was a novel and hers a memoir. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your book and your journey to publication?
Okay, sure will. The title of the book is Vaccines and Bayonets, Fighting Smallpox in Africa Amid Tribalism, Terror, and the Cold War. It's a historical memoir of our time in West Africa when my husband was helping to wipe smallpox off the face of the earth. It began as a public health journey and became a geopolitical one, with somewhat of a political thriller aspect to it when we were transferred to a country that was in the grip of a vicious dictator who had won the first presidential election. The book was, I didn't start out to write a book. It's just that I had all of these documents. My husband had passed away. This is like 12 years ago. And when he was a paperholic, and I was reading through this entire file drawer of documents from our time in West Africa, and they just screamed at me, "You have to write this book. You have to write this book." I had no choice. So that's how the book, that's how I started, was documenting a really important story.
So you had all these documents and you had a story that you knew was in there that you knew you had to tell. So how did you find the story among these documents? You said he was a paperholic, so there must have been a lot of documents, a lot of duplicates, a lot of stuff that just didn't really add to the story. How did you go through all of that and find the story?
Well, it was a daunting task. When I had these documents spread out on my bed and on my table, and tried to figure out how to make sense of the storyline, because one of the problems was that there were multiple documents talking about the same thing. There was cable traffic with the ambassador. There were Carl's official reports to CDC. There were official government documents, embassy documents, all unclassified, you understand? I have no classified documents in my possession. But many of these talked about some of the same things. So actually, I finally put a painter's tape the entire length of the hallway in my apartment and started putting little flags of the events and so on. And actually, Lisa, I kept it when I moved out of that apartment, had a ceremony with champagne and cheese and took it down and saved it. I know that people who are just on I know that people on audio cannot see this, and I don't know if it shows up at all.
Yes, but because we are just a podcast, but maybe I'll be able to post a short clip of this video on YouTube, so you can see that. Yeah, so that's you you did a timeline. So you've got the timeline of events, but then, you know, stories aren't necessary or not necessarily linear. So how did you go from that then to going to organizing it into a story?
I worked from my memories and plugged these events into memories of things that were just emblazoned in my memory from time there. I did not write the book chronologically, even though it does happen in the story is in a chronological order for the most part. But I first wrote the events, the stories, like each chapter is a story within the story. And the events that were the most burned into my memory because of the traumatic nature of them, those were the things I wrote first. And I wound up then later organizing. I put the different stories or chapter tentative titles or keywords on the backs of old business cards. And I first spread them all over my living room floor and then thought, okay, well, this should come first, or this story is getting a little too tense here. I need to give the reader a break with something light. And so yeah, I would plug into that spot. I would move the cards around and think, okay, this slightly humorous story or lighthearted, this lighthearted incident would give the reader a break from the tension and carry us on to the next part of my memories and of my story.
And you did that on your living room floor.
It started on my living room floor, and then one evening I was having some people over, and so obviously it had to go, and I had moved them to a table. They wound up eventually on the back of a hall closet door with scotch tape, and I would many, many, many times over the months, I would move those things around and no, this really needs to be here, so that we have a good story arc, and also the conflict and so on, building toward the conflict situations, and then the relief from that, and then building some more, building higher toward the next episode, next bit of conflict.
So did you have some people helping you with this? I mean, did you invite them to come into your closet or?
No, I didn't. I showed it to a number of my fellow writers as we went along. And in fact, I mentioned taking down the timeline. When I was ready to move, the apartment was totally empty, the furniture, everything, all the boxes, they were gone. The only thing left in the apartment was the timeline. And I had had that there for 5 years at that point. And so my fellow memoirists, the memoir mavens, came over to this empty apartment, brought champagne and cheese, and we had this little ceremony, and I took the timeline down off the wall. So, but no one helped me with changing the order of chapters, but they enjoyed, and a number of them said this is really helpful to them, and some of them began to use the same system I did. Some people use an entirely digital system, but for me, it has to be something organic, something I can touch and physically move around.
So you suggest that the method of using cards and taping them to a door?
Yes, for some people, I think that at least a number of people told me it was helpful, and somebody even asked my permission to write an article about the way I did it. So I assume that some of your listeners could find it helpful to them as well.
So when you went and you were looking at these cards, you asked yourself, did you have like a checklist of things that you would ask yourself when you were looking at these?
I suppose there was a mental checklist. I didn't think of it in those terms. It was just more my feeling about it, my feeling about each chapter. Some of them, you know, I felt the tension myself when I really thought about that chapter, when I was working on that chapter. Sometimes I was, as I was writing and rewriting and rewriting, I would go and think, ah, okay, this is having this, this is on this part of an arc. I need to go in and switch this card with this one. And so it just kept evolving as I went along. And then of course, you know, I think writers should always be in a good critique group. And I had a great critique group. Now, of course, most of those people were only seeing one chapter at a time. But then when I put the manuscript out to beta readers, that led to two or three other rearranging of chapters.
Yeah, beta readers are very important, as well as editors, because a lot of people may be in critique groups, but those people who are in your critique group, they are not necessarily editors. They're not necessarily people who have even written a whole book themselves. But so beta readers can be very important.
Right. Yeah, that's a really good point. I happen to be fortunate enough to have a fantastic critique group. There were three people in the group who were retired college professors of creative writing, and two people who had careers as editors, but their editing background was not in creative writing. It was in technical writing, so had to, you know, they had to learn creative writing themselves as they were bringing their own work. But it was a really high quality critique group. So I'm glad you pointed that out, Lisa, because you can just be in a group with other people who are learning just as you are.
So you got the timeline down and the structure that you wanted down. So what other things did you do to, you would have to research? There were some dates, were there dates or facts or things that just were not hazy that you knew you need to look into more?
Exactly. When I first started working on this book, I thought, oh, this is, you know, I'm not going to need to have a bibliography even, because this book is going to be entirely from my own documents and my own memories. Well, as I went along, it was obvious that, oh, well, I'm talking about this, but the reader needs some context. They need the historical context of what was going on at that time. They need this, how did this early post-colonial period work? You know, a lot of different things that I realized had to be researched. There were, of course, I researched from the books of other historians and so on, but also the State Department has what do they call it? ASDT, American State Department. Anyway, it's voice recordings of interviews with every ambassador when they retire. They do a recording of about their career. And there were also recordings with CDC at the 30th anniversary of the eradication of smallpox, which is a really historic event. There's no other disease, human disease, has ever been eradicated to this point. So at the 30th anniversary, they did a lot of interviews and interviewed a number of our colleagues. And so listening to those fleshed out a lot of my memories. The State Department recordings absolutely went to YouTube and found, it was a 60-minute recording that had been done at the time we were first in northern Nigeria, and that was during the Nigeria-Biafra War. And there was a 60-minute show that had been done about that conflict. There were so many options out there for finding elements that fit into my story. I also read other memoirs of people writing about their time in Africa, and they would mention a smell or something like that, and I think, oh yeah, I remember that, and it would jog my memory about things that had happened. I even found on YouTube, I was writing about this old historic marketplace in Kano, Nigeria, and I found a video of someone who, it was just a tourist, and they were walking through that market, and the person was videotaping as they were walking through. And I had been writing about the way the stalls were constructed, but I didn't have a clear memory of that. And here was this video showing that. So there are so many resources out there that you might not think about initially.
What other resources are there that you discovered along the way?
One was, besides the ones I've just mentioned, there were, what do they call that? Google Earth, where you can pull up and see the topography and everything of an area that you're writing about. And if you're writing about a fairly current event, you can see the buildings and all of this. There's also, now I didn't discover this until later, so this wasn't something I used, but there is a resource, Radio Garden. It's an app you can download free, Radio Garden, and you can access radio stations all over the world and hear current news. You can hear the music and all of these things. So that was another resource. And maybe at some other time, when there's time to discuss it, I can go into how I organized all of that external research and organized it in a way that made sense, plus gave me a way to work with it, and then winnowed that down as I went along. I had a mentor who was a university professor, the University of Arizona, and she had mentored many PhD candidates through their dissertations, and she's the one who gave me this method of working with organizing that material.
So if somebody is out there and they have, maybe they're in a similar situation where they've lost loved ones who have a bunch of documents that could be made into a story, and or a memoir, or somebody has adventures in their past that they wanted to write about someday, what kind of advice would you give those people?
I think to start with, I would give them the advice that a creative writing group gave me when I walked in. I just had the idea, I have to write this book, but I didn't know where to start. I walked into this meetup group, And I just said, I have all these documents. And they said, just start writing. Start writing and then and secure these documents. Make sure that, you know, there are copies or whatever, that so you're not going to lose these as time goes on. So that's one piece of advice. And I would say, you know, just start out. Don't delay. Start with it. But think, first of all, I think, what does this mean in your life, or what kind of story do you want to tell? What kind of a message, is there a message you want to get across? Kind of think of your central theme, central purpose, I think, for writing a book. Or putting these into some type of a book-like framework, and think about who you want to do it for. Some people just want to do this for their grandchildren, for example. But a number of people who start out that way wind up writing a book that becomes, you know, really a good book for anybody who has family, who has. One of my fellow critique partners says her book is for anybody with ancestors. There are many ways to go about it, but I guess mainly think about your purpose.
So you got a draft together that you were happy with, and you got a publisher. Was that a hard process or not so hard?
Well, I sent query letters and so on for a while, but this the book is a niche book, I would say. It is, I think it's important in many different areas. There are probably about three large niche audiences for it: public health, early post-colonial history, African history, and also one of the categories that the book does well in is African travel guides for some reason. But the, Lisa, I just forgot your main question.
So you got published. You got the book published.
Yeah. So I wound up doing a hybrid publishing. I found a publishing company that I was familiar with, actually, because I had four fellow writers who had published with them. And so I knew the quality of their work. And so I used a hybrid publisher and I didn't mind paying them to aggregate these tasks that I would have had to find my own editor and formatter and all of these different aspects to actually putting a book physically together. So I used Wheatmark Publishing in Tucson, Arizona.
That's good. That's good. I mean, a lot of people just don't want to wait any longer, and hybrid publishing is a good option. I think I might do an episode about that soon, actually. Mm-hmm. So you've got your book out there. You're now using your book for speaking. And so what's next?
Well, that's a great question, Lisa. And I've got two answers for that. I'll back up a second. When I first started to write the book, my purpose, and your purpose, I mentioned know your purpose, and it may evolve. Excuse me. My purpose initially was, I was just thinking of a much shorter book than what I eventually published. I was just setting out to tell some stories, some really interesting stories and important stories. And then that grew into a goal to educate. And now, especially as I've spoken in many different places about my book, it has evolved into a mission to inspire. And now my mission is to inspire one reader, one audience at a time to find a way to make a difference in the world. And so that is kind of a new realization for me. And the book has changed me in that respect. And what is next now is that I'm about to come out with an audiobook version of Vaccines and Bayonets. And I'm just thrilled to death about that.
Well, that's good. That's good. Yeah. So I think you even have ideas about the narrator.
Yes, I have a great narrator, Claudia Dunn. She is a classically trained actor. She's done voice acting, voiceovers, book narration. She also does a lot of the audio description for PBS Masterpiece shows. She just has great credentials, and she's just super talented, and I'm just thrilled to have her doing the narration. And it's not going to be too long coming. The master recording is supposed to be ready August 30th and 2024. And then about 30 to 45 days after that, it would be available on retail sites all over the world and libraries and so on. So I'm really excited about it.
Well, that's great. I really look forward to that. And because I primarily do my reading through audio, so I'll be looking forward to that. And I'll be looking for your next speaking engagement as well.
Well, thanks.
So thank you for being here, and good luck with the audiobook.
Thank you, Lisa, and thanks for having me.